It's good to be with you all this morning. My name's Scott McNeil. It's my privilege to serve as the minister here at Brew. Our call to worship this morning comes from my colleague, the Reverend Barbara Hamilton Hallway. She writes, "We gather here as individual people, young and old, male and female, gay, straight and bisexual, temporarily able and disabled, all the colors of the human race, theist, atheist, agnostic, Christian, feminist, Buddhist, humanist. We gather here as a community of people who are more than categories. We gather here, each ministering to the other, meeting one another's strength, encouraging wholeness. We give thanks for this extraordinary blessing to be with one another, the gathering together of separate, unique individuals as one whole, one body, one church. Here may our minds stretch, our hearts open, our spirits deepen. Here may we acknowledge our brokenness and be ever stirred by love's infinite possibilities. Come, let us worship." This morning, there are two readings I want to share with you. The first is from Pablo Neruda. He writes, "There arises an insight which the poet learns through other people. It's this, that there is no insurmountable solitude. All paths lead to the same goal, to convey to others what and who we are, and what we must pass, and we must pass through solitude and difficulty, isolation and silence, in order to reach forth to the enchanted place where we can dance our clumsy dance and sing our sorrowful song. But in this dance or in this song, there are fulfilled the most ancient rites of our conscience and the awareness of being human and of believing in a common destiny." That common destiny is a theme in our next reading. It's actually two shorter pieces from Bell Hooks of two different books. First, she writes that she wants to be in a place in the world where people can engage in one another's differences in a way that is redemptive, full of hope and possibility. Not this, "In order to love you, I must make you something else" sort of place. That's what domination is about, she supposes, that in order to be close to something, we often think we must possess, remake, and recast something in our image. In her second piece, she goes on to say that beloved community is formed not by the eradication of difference, but by its affirmation. By each of us claiming the identities and cultural legacies that shape who we are and how we live in this world. Each week, as part of our work together, as part of our building that beloved community, we take an offering from the bounty we're blessed to enjoy. And during a part of our month, we give half of that offering to a group in the community that does work. This month, Work for Good, this month we've invited Mitch Nason from the IAFF, the International Association of Firefighters 2598, to come forward and offer a little bit of what they do. So Mitch is one of the vice presidents of the local IAFF, the Prince William Professional Firefighters. I wish I could say that the box idea came from some inspired place, but you can imagine, I've been sitting looking at these boxes for months now, just wanting them out of my house. So I've grown to make a certain peace with them, almost, I would hope, some sort of non-attachment to them. Say if, for instance, one of them got lost or damaged in the move, I'd have to let go of what was in them. I thought this was probably a pretty good place to be, an enlightened place, if you would, until some of them did get lost or damaged. Not so enlightened at that moment. Starting to figure out where certain things went, and I thought, I expected, well, it was labeled such and such. The box metaphor for me became very real, especially when we got to Manassas and started putting boxes in places. This box labeled thusly went here. And a month or so later, there they sit for the most part. I promise sometime they won't be there. But that's how it goes. We find things, we label them and place them there. And often once they're there, if you don't change it immediately, it's hard to move it. For me, looking at the boxes, and maybe it's good sometimes, at least for me, to have the visual back again. This one was a good reminder to see that it's opaque, that boxes are things that we can't really figure out what's inside from looking on the outside. We can't know what's going on in there. We can't hear it or feel it or touch it or see it from the outside. The label only tells us so much. It was a reminder for me that no matter what descriptions we put on there, and sometimes they were very clear, they weren't always accurate. You thought this was a kitchen item? I used this in the bathroom. Or they'd get mismatched, half one and half the other. Those of us who have had those identities in life, living in two worlds, cross-culturally in different ways, know what that's like. How do you start to separate your life from the bathroom life? So think about it for a moment. What are the labels that you have across your boxes? Late one night in August, or July, excuse me, I told Sarah Getty I had a $1 million idea. I said, oh, it'd be great if someone just created tape and it was color and you could just know which room it went to so we didn't have to write on each of these boxes. So a couple weeks later, I'd forgotten the idea and we walked into a U-Haul store and sure enough, there it was. Probably a $1 million idea, but already gotten there. But there it was. Many colors of tape, some of it for dining room and bedroom, both master and kids and guest. All of the different tapes meant different things. What are your tapes? What are your labels? Surely there are some of those that were given to you at birth. Maybe, like me, kind of like from our story earlier, there were things we can assume based on birth or culture, such as gender or sex, which may or may not line up. There are labels we've taken on, chosen, or accepted over our lives, such as religion. Sometimes religion's cultural, we're given that at our birth, and sometimes we choose something different, or we feel called to something different. Whenever we're mislabeled, whether people assume that we're one thing and we end up something different, whenever we're mislabeled, it hurts. How many times have you felt ignored, overlooked, isolated, hurt because someone thought you were one thing and really you are another, whether it's political, religious, whether it comes to your sexuality or anything? Kierkegaard, great theologian, says, once you label me, you negate me. So it's true that in some way, the labeling thing can be difficult, but not in all ways. As we all know, again, sometimes we choose the labels. I am proud to have chosen the label as Unitarian Universalist. Labels are good. Definitions belong to the definers, not the defined, Toni Morrison says, and in some ways that's true, and in some ways it's not. The defined in our culture, in our society, are taking definitions back. So, the labels. Sometimes they're hard, sometimes they're not. Some of my labels are, as we said earlier, male and minister, and that's what you can see today with a robe and a stole. But 6 days and 23 hours a week, I don't wear that. Well, we have two services, so 22 hours a week, I don't wear this. So what do people see most days when I'm at Target? And as Mitch said, I'm not at my best. I'm not on my A game. What do the firefighters see when they come into my life at 3 in the morning because there's been a fire? Or the police when there's a break-in? Do any of us see the fullness of our lives? How do the labels affect us? Are we able to use those to either tell our story or limit us? In many ways, what I hope is that this metaphor of box isn't just about how we're held back by boxes, but both how we are contained by them, but how we can come out of them. We're both charged with unpacking boxes, but also climbing out of them. I'll get to that more in a minute. Some other things as I looked at these boxes and really tried to think about this sermon this morning was that truly there's only so much you can fit in there. And it's true, someone, I think maybe Anise or someone else this morning, was saying, well, I was wondering where you were going. Were you going to have like refrigerator-sized boxes? I thought, well, that would have been smart. That was a great idea. I did have different size boxes, but regardless of what size you have, there's still only so much. And in a faith such as ours, our liberal religion is one that says the world should be somewhat unlimited, that the creativity that comes with each person building their world, their faith with one another in relationship says that life shouldn't be cramped, that we should be able to stretch and grow. Doesn't mean that there are no boundaries, only that when we are held in, not able to be ourselves, therein lies a problem. And in many ways, it's a question of whether we are held back and pushed in or whether we're helped out. Think for a minute about the metaphor of climbing out of a box. When I was writing up this sermon, and I've been working on this literally all summer, forget water communion, this was the sermon I looked forward to. I'm kidding, mostly. You know, I looked into all sorts of readings about the box, and most of what I could find was climb out of the box, step out of the box, get out of the box. It's true. Most of those readings came from motivational speakers, self-help gurus, very smart people, and yet the one thing I noticed was that they almost to a one said, you have the power within you to just climb out. Just do it. Just let go of whatever's holding you back. I thought about the fact that for so many people, better not do it on a small step. For so many people, being in a box is like being in a small box, in your feet, and you can't move, and you're stuck. So the question isn't just about can you step out? Sure, some of us can. Some of us have that privilege to be able to do that, and yet some of us need help. Some of us can climb, some of us need to be picked up, and some of us feel like we have been in a box and just the box has been dumped over and everything's come crashing out. And we have to pick up the pieces of our lives for whatever they're worth up off the ground. Dr. Kathleen Anthofar writes, living in a box will eventually smother you or wither you. So it's true, we've got to get out of it. She goes on to say, great things are lifted out of packages, not kept in them. What box are you living in right now? She finishes with. Great things are lifted out of packages. And so part of the question for us is, are we lifting ourselves and one another out of packages, or are we assuming that everyone's just going to get out on their own? Someone else says, Lori Dunavant, she's a hospice therapist. She writes, we understand that you can't transform people who don't have that drive and desire to create. So we can't do for people, which I think is true. But we also, she writes, we also know it doesn't work to urge people to think outside the box without giving them the tools to climb out. That's important to realize that there are so many times we just expect people to do things that we want them to do. I think about this on a more institutional level as we look at issues of justice. Sarah Getty and I, my wife, we were looking at a movie recently and talking about the benefits, and this was the tiny house movement. Have you heard of this, where people build these small houses and how great this would be for people to limit their things, and obviously with all the boxes, we're wanting to, you know, downsize, but how great it could be for people. Then we started talking about some of the societal impacts this could have. And maybe this could change neighborhoods and how people expect or interact with buying things. I noted that we can't just expect people to go and live in a small house and give up everything they've had when culture and society has taught them that buying things and having things is a measure of their worth. We can't undo one day, a year, a life, generations or millennia of societal teachings. We have to do more than just urge people to change it on their own. We have to give them the tools. And so part of that is a question, how do we do it? Do we just expect people to jump out on their own, or do we go in and help by unpacking everything? And therein lies the sermon title, which usually I don't care for because I can't do that very well, that short piece. But I meant it when I said that we are called in some way to go through every single box and unpack them, whether they're boxes in our lives or in the rest of the world. So think about it in your life. I asked you to think about the labels that you have, but what are the boxes? Tell me the different stories, maybe not today, but maybe in the coming weeks and months and years, I hope, you'll tell me the way that your life has been segmented. For some, it's childhood and young adulthood and adulthood. For some, it's just years or days that they can separate. But it's good for you even to go through them, even if you're not moving, to go through the boxes in your mind and start to unpack, well, what does this mean for me? Why do I respond this way when this person says this? Why do I love this smell, this song, this taste, this scent? Unpacking these boxes helps us understand not just ourselves, but helps us communicate that to others and helps them tell their own story. In many ways, when we can love ourselves, that's a way that we can help others feel love. One of the reasons I love the song that Courtney and Kelly sang and that Anise chose, or the three of them chose together, is that it asks the question of who will love us and how can we find that love. And deeper within that is getting to that self-love, but also challenging ourselves to love others in times of great difficulty. Margaret Wheatley writes a lot of books that ministers read about leadership and also just connecting relationally. She writes this. It's a little long, so I might repeat a couple phrases. She writes, "What if we were to be together and listen to each other's comments with a willingness to expose rather than to confirm our own beliefs and opinions? What if we were to willingly listen to one another with the awareness that we see the world in unique ways and with the expectation that I could learn something new if I listened for the differences rather than the similarities?" Again, think about that. Differences rather than the similarities. Or yet another reading in a different way, this from David Foster Wallace. He writes, "Here's just one example of a way that I live my life. And for him, he sees it as a total wrongness. I'm not saying it is for you, but he sees it as a total wrongness of a way that he lives his life. Everything in my own immediate experience supports the deep belief that I am the absolute center of the universe." Again, I'm not saying you do, but he does. He writes, "We rarely think about this sort of natural, basic self-centeredness because it's so repulsive, but it's pretty much the same for all of us. It's our default setting, hardwired into our boards at birth. Think about it. There is no experience that you have had that you are not the center of. The world as you experience is there in front of you or behind you, to the left or right of you, on your TV or your monitor, and so on. Other people's thoughts and feelings have to be communicated to you somehow. But your own are so immediate, urgent, real. The really important kind of freedom," he writes, "involves attention and awareness and discipline and being able truly to care about other people, to sacrifice for them over and over in myriad petty and unglamorous ways. That's real freedom. That's educated, being educated and understanding how to think." And in my world, that's the way to unpack our boxes, not just to seek to be loved for who we are, though many of us need that. Very real, real need. But we also need to offer that to one another. And this is the place where I invite you to sit and pause for a moment, to think of all the labels that have been taped over you, the boxes that you were placed in and put in the wrong stack, in the wrong room, in the wrong house. And you were just eager for someone to pick you up and move you, to poke a hole in the box so that you could scream out, "I'm not meant to be here." To think about the times that you were helped out, helped to climb out, that someone lifted you out, and that you were seen for the great thing that you are. Not dumped, not just put in storage for 5 years, or trashed. To think about those times in your life, whatever they were, and then to go one step further. To think of whatever it is, however it looks, that you can offer that to someone else. It doesn't have to be the world. You don't have to save the world. You don't have to save anyone. But to offer that love, the love that we sing about, that we speak about, that we long for. When we can receive it and give it, that's when we know we're there. I go back to that bell hooks reading where she says, "Beloved community is formed not by eradicating difference, but by affirming it." We're not meant for each of us to totally lose the labels or the boxes, simply to come out of them, to stretch, to be ourselves, to meet one another, to join one another, to love one another. May it be so. Amen. Please join me in a moment of silent reflection before our closing hymn, 1053, "How Could Anyone?" As we go out into the world, may we be changed and changing, loved and loving. We are called by all that is holy, nature, humanity, spirit, and God, to be fair and kind, just and whole. Go from here in peace.